Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast, and for the last time in 2025, you are listening to a bunch of dumbasses talk about games. Bree's here, Aki's here, Jacob's here, Horacolite is here, and Chris is here. How's everybody doing?
I would like to correct you. They're only going to hear dumbass things about games from us for the rest of the year. Other people are still doing podcasts, and they're just as dumb, if not dumber. They're still going to hear stupid shit, just not from us.
Well, we don't know. We can't assume what other people do with their lives. For example, despite making one for 13 years, I don't listen to podcasts.
I really don't either. I tried.
How funny is that? I do on literally February 3rd. It will be our 13 year anniversary. I don't listen to them. I've tried wrestling podcasts, gaming podcasts. The only podcast that I have ever been able to sit and listen to for an extended period of time is this one, because it's the only one that kept my interest. Honestly, swear to God, and I'm not just saying that because it's us. Like, I can forget I'm listening to our show while I'm editing it, and I'll just let it go for 40 minutes. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm just listening to me.
Yeah, because you have to edit our dumbasses. Like, that's different, though.
No, but I mean, like, after it's done and I'm I have either the MP3 testing or the video running to test it, make sure it's public and the audio quality's good and all the timestamps are correct. Like, I'll set a timestamp and I'll just forget because I'll get into the review.
Nice.
And I've tried, like, legitimately, supposedly entertaining podcasts. A lot of wrestling ones, and like Edge and Christian supposedly had one of the best podcasts to listen to.
Edge Christians? Oh my God.
Yes.
That's so weird.
I couldn't make it through a single episode. I've never been able to complete a full episode of any podcast ever, except this one.
I'm surprised that you aren't able to do that for wrestling. I honestly would have expected you to be following 5 or 6 wrestling ones at least.
Aw, Jacob, thank you. He was all
right. Announce it, you bitch.
Jacob with a 20-month resub. Thank you so much, Jacob. I appreciate your, an Amazon Prime? Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for your Prime sub.
Once I cancel my Prime subscription again, my subscription's going to go away. But, you know, you can enjoy it for now.
I will. Someone subbed earlier. Who the hell was it?
Bunkyote. Oh, man.
Thought it was Rando. Could have been. I can't find it. No.
Yeah, it was Trash you, Rando.
Was it? Okay. Thanks, Rando.
Thanks, Rando.
Yay. Let's just burn 6 minutes at the beginning of the show talking about me scrolling through chat and going,
Since we're not making these sounds, that would be great.
Jacob.
You need to, like, a little bit lighter and, like, an inflection at the end, like you're asking a question.
The Starbucks approach.
Well, no, it's really like, Tim Allen on Home Improvement, like, after he's had some helium. That's really, I've watched so much porn in my lifetime, that's the only way I can get off anymore.
And this is why we don't have that many listeners. Oh my God, we are awful people. We are awful. That's like Bree, I think. Chris is okay, too. Chris, you have any Christmas plans?
Yeah.
Huh? Oh, I don't know. Just not working for a day would be nice. But yeah, I was just going to say, like, from earlier that I also... So I do listen to podcasts, like, all the time, but I cannot listen to gaming podcasts, and I cannot listen to music podcasts. It's very funny.
See, gaming podcasts are the only ones I really listen to, and that's where, if anytime I have news, it's usually where I got it from.
What keeps you engaged? What do we do wrong? How do we keep people engaged?
Oh my god, dude, that's an entire episode in itself. Jacob,
What we do wrong?
What we do wrong is I already hear the episode while we're recording it, so I don't have to listen to it a second time.
Yeah, well, but what about the Thursday episode?
I'm on it every Thursday. I don't need it, and I'm on almost every Tuesday. I don't need it.
So, what keeps me engaged in podcasts? It's really just that I turned it on and I'm in the car or something like that. It's like, you know, it's like it's going. I'm just gonna be there. Lack of ads. If I hear an ad during a podcast, even if it's one where the hosts are reading a script, I don't listen to it anymore.
That's fair.
It's fine that they do that. You know, you got to make that money, but I just can't stand it.
We don't get any offers for advertising, so I don't think we'll ever have that issue. The closest we get is that we have to disclose when we get games, which I basically do in our announcement of the description of the game, which I did to make it easier to review, because we originally with reviews, I'd be like, all right, first game is this but from this person. Tell me about it.
But if we did the thing where we pause the show between like the banter and then you're like, now let's get to reviews. And then it's like, by the way, I'm reading this ad copy for this mattress company. I'm pretending I don't know how to read a copy. You know, like when they try to make it like this joke, like they're like, oh, look at me. I'm reading an ad copy. And then like, but they're still reading the ad copy. And it's like, no, it's cringe.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah, it makes me like, and you know, not all the streaming services have very good skip buttons for that kind of stuff. Like YouTube is the worst. If I'm listening to something on YouTube.
Speaking of ads, we got to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
For the best breakfast this side of Lake Michigan, come on down to Joe Cam's Pancake House, right in the heart of Milwaukee. Biscuits and gravy for miles, deep pocket buttered waffles, and all the pancakes you can guzzle down. Oh. Serving breakfast all day, 7 days a week.
I love
Milwaukee. Why have I not heard that commercial?
You didn't hear that?
No, I mean, I heard it just now.
Oh, I know you heard it now, but you haven't heard that before? Really? Have you heard the COVID one?
Oh, okay. It was during COVID. Well, I don't remember anything.
No, have you heard the COVID one? Oh, you haven't heard the COVID one either then.
I think I did hear the COVID one, yeah.
Well, just in case, we have another quick commercial break. We'll be right back.
I did it to everybody. I'm sorry, everybody.
Too late. I'm playing it.
In these uncertain and troubled times of uncertainty, we stand together with our workplace heroes who make the wettest pancakes either side of the Mississippi flow straight to your dinner table with our exclusive curbside pickup. Joe Cam's Pancake House. Wet pancakes, no matter what.
Yep.
No batter what?
How good is that?
That was excellent.
Yeah, Norg is insane.
He's good at his job.
He really is.
I like the choice.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to ask if he also did the music, like the piano part and stuff.
Yes, he did everything there.
That's excellent.
Yep. Boy, there's the cum shot at the end.
Right.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. By the way, that's what that melody is called in our group.
I've never heard it called that before. I assume that must be an in-joke.
You've never heard that little jingle called the cum shot?
No, I've never heard it called that. Yeah, no. I don't think anybody else does that. Nobody else calls it that.
Oh, man. Like, literally everyone I know calls it that. Or the shot.
I know the lick.
That's after the cum shot.
Da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah,
it's the jazz lick. Everybody on YouTube, just go look up the lick jazz, and then it'll show you like 1,000 jazz performances where it only cuts to the part where they go da 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 da. It's like in every jazz song. It's very funny.
Who is?
What am I hearing?
Hockey, we hear so. Hockey
forgot to mute.
Hockey.
Oh.
Hockey? I think we lost her.
No, I'm muted. What?
Oh. I don't know. We keep hearing someone in your background.
Well, you know, that's what happens when I'm not home and the whole house isn't quiet.
Yeah, that jingle right there. The original version right before as Dale North himself going, come shot, because he's the one who did that jingle.
Hey,
yeah,
that's weird.
And now it's in video games everywhere. That was an old VG Mix thing. I think Prozac is the one who originally played it, and then Dale did that arrangement, and then it's in like everything 1UP Studios would put out, and people still sneak into the songs.
See, like, these are mostly people I don't know personally, so this just not come up.
Yeah, I guess it originated in the VG Mix 1UP Studio scene, and I don't know. If you know it from something else, I have no idea what. I just know it as the cum shot.
Nice. Well, today I learned.
Iberian Sons put it in their One Winged Angel.
Oh, God.
Or no, Prancing Dad. They put it in Prancing Dad, right near the end.
I don't even know good Prancing stuff. Dad.
From their first EP, I think. Lateral Jammage.
That's a good name.
Yeah, I'll hook you up with that. It's one that's not on like Spotify or anything. I think that was before they got any kind of licensing done for releases.
Oh.
There's also a song on there called Paragon is an Asshole Part 2. Which is a Fox Sports theme cover. Really good. I've played right so much of Tiberian Sons on this show. But what is everyone planning to do for the holidays? Anyone have any plans coming up while we're taking a good month-ish off?
I'm going to sit on the couch and binge watch things.
My
brand new couch. Indeed. I'm going to watch the new Fallout season. Going to watch the end of Stranger Things. And just generally watch things on Netflix because we're going to get it for like a month and binge watch everything we can and then cancel.
Nice.
That's how to do it. That is the way to do it. Aki, what do you have going on over the break?
Assassin's Creed Shadows and probably adult games. And that's it, really.
So it's just business as usual.
Yeah, pretty much.
You'll just have less games to play.
Oh, no, I still have just as many games to play. I all the games from all years I've been here still doesn't even equal half of my backlog. So,
okay, but I mean new games. Well,
oh, no, I don't.
Yeah.
Nah.
But Lord really knows in the gaming industry, if it's older than 2 weeks, like, no one cares about it anymore. Like, I don't even know what a Silk that. Song is anymore.
Silk Song, what's that?
I think there's still plenty of people who care about older games. I think it's bringing up old games. And I'm not the old only one here who does, Chris.
Old games are for children.
Come on, how long did I fight for friggin' pixel remasters on Xbox?
Mm-hmm.
I love retro gaming.
Yeah, we need more retro games to come back.
Do. Or act like, what are you going to do over break?
I have about 6 games that have been sitting here that I've have unfinished from like last year that I need to finish. Then yeah, we'll see if I get them done.
And anything specific you want to tackle?
Broken Roads is one of them. It's like a Wasteland style RPG game that I started last year. Dungeon Drafters, I need to play more Balatro. And then regrettably, I still need to finish Diablo 4, which I don't even really want to finish personally, but I'm like pretty close to the end, I think, or
I don't
at least
think
of the main
the story
campaign.
Either.
Oh,
I don't know at this point.
I don't know. It's okay. The last two Diablo entries for me were just kind of super generic. I think Path of Exiles is such a way better game. I don't know. I think it's just me, maybe, but
I don't know. I enjoyed the Diablos. They keep my
The first Diablo. The first one's fucking fantastic.
I mean, even Diablo 4 I'm having a good time with. I know it's not the best in the series, but it's still entertaining enough to keep me going. I'm debating
whether I don't think it's a bad expansion or not. I think I only know one person that's played it, and they seem to be enjoying it. But yeah, that's about it, I think.
I know the new one is early next year, but you get the Paladin class now if you pre-order. I kind of want to check out the Paladin.
Yeah, I haven't tried the last like two updates or whatever, so I'm pretty far behind.
Jacob, what are you doing?
Well, I think you guys should guess what I'm going
to
do.
On to
Dreamlight Valley.
Exactly. Catch up on Disney Dreamlight Valley. Really explore Wish Blossom Ranch. And then also I have a bunch of Outright Games titles that I have to catch up on.
Which ones? Like,
and more Halls of Torment.
Yeah, also more
Halls
of Torment.
Torment was a really weird Outright Game published title.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't expecting like a T for teen game from them.
Paw Patrol got friggin' dark.
Oh yeah,
but pretty much like this fall's catalog, I didn't get to finish. The only title I did get to 100% was Gabby's Dollhouse. So I want to go back and finish the rest of them.
Cool. I want to dive into the Final Fantasy VII demo. I think that demo finally hit Xbox. I want to give it a go. The progress carries over to the full game, which right now you could pre-order for $40. And if you do, it includes the original version of 7 and the PC version of 7. So $40. I think that's a really good price.
Yeah.
Where's doing decent. With a port price for once. And then I'm debating if I want to try diving into Final Fantasy 16. That's been in my backlog for a very long
time. Yeah, I almost bought the physical of that.
Now I own it twice, so I feel like I have to play it now.
Heard it's pretty good. Big step up from 15.
Yeah, it wasn't... I don't know, 15 never really caught my interest. Just... Why am I driving in a car in Final Fantasy?
I thought it was okay.
They didn't want to give you the chocobos all the time, apparently, even though the chocobos are perfect.
I mean, you drove to school in 8.
Yeah. But, I don't know. It had, like, I think my roads, like, in America. It just felt weird.
I think my big saving grace going into that game was like everyone I know that had played it was just constantly shitting on it. And my bar was like so low going into it that I didn't hate it by the time I finished. I was like, oh, this is actually not too bad. I was expecting this to be a lot worse.
I've heard it's solid. It just never really caught me. But there's tons of people who love 13 and 10, and I don't like either of those. So. And then people hate 12, right. And that's one of my favorites.
Yeah, 12. 12 is one of my least favorite. I didn't even finish it.
Same.
I hated 12 for the same reason I hated 8, though. I just, the characters. I didn't like any of the characters in 12. Admittedly, in 12, though, they have a bit more life to them. I didn't like them in 8 because I thought they were all kind of lifeless shells, and I didn't really care for any of them.
8 felt like... Final Fantasy going through a rebellious teenage phase.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like when Miley started like smoking weed and cursing on her albums. And then Final Fantasy IX was when she went back to country.
How do you have this knowledge of Miley Cyrus albums?
I mean,
that's the guy who was just talking about Disney Dreamlight Valley.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah.
Something
Hannah
that
not in the game? Have you not played Hannah Montana? I bought you that for Christmas. How many years ago? Did you not play it?
No, we were all supposed to like get together and play it because I thought it had Xbox Live capability, didn't it?
I have no idea.
I thought it did. And so like we were all supposed to get together because you bought like 5 copies of it for people. And then we never did.
God, my eyes are going. I can't read this shit. what does the case say? That is 300K to save. HDTV, in-game Dolby, one player. Yeah, there's no online.
Oh, man, so I've just been sitting on it all these years? Okay, well, I guess I got something else to do over Christmas break.
There you go. Hannah Montana, it's time.
1K Hannah Montana.
You should do it, too. We really should just get on Discord and play it together. Now we have Discord to do it. But Tross could fuck yourself.
We could do it like the, remember like how you used to have Boga play shitty games all, like live on the podcast? Like, I remember I was there for Man vs. Wild.
Man vs. Bogue.
Yeah.
Bogue vs. Wild. Yeah.
One of those. Should do that with Hannah Montana.
Oh,
just
man,
live stream it and send that as a, send that as an episode.
Remember before we had a format and we would just like hit record and be like, what are we doing? I remember Chris and I, the one week, we just like, we were watching a stream of a pinball game on YouTube while recording, and neither of us were saying anything because we were really involved in the pinball video.
I'm assuming this is Huber, not me.
Oh, yeah, early days. Sorry. Yeah, Chris Huber.
I'm the early days, too.
You are the early days, but I'm just saying when it was.
Yeah. Like,
I think I lived in Danville back then. Oh, my God.
The Wild West days of SML.
Yeah. Jacob showed up on one of the crazier episodes back then. The hospital episode.
Oh, yeah. I was there for part of it.
How dumb was that?
That was pretty fucking dumb. Although, you know, my It's a Girl balloon for you made it all better.
It did. I had back surgery,
that's
and
fantastic.
It was E3, so I didn't want to miss out on the E3 episode, right? So record it in a hospital bed.
Dork.
While being administered pain medication the entire time. Oh, nurses coming in, dork, checking my vitals during the show.
Didn't Ashley also bring in like one of your cats too?
No.
I thought she did.
No.
Or no, you tried to get her to bring in one of them.
Probably.
That's dedication.
Yeah, she never did that. That's not that wouldn't fly. But if I were on my deathbed, I'd be like, sneak me outside. Nicole Train. Right next to me right now. Hey, baby.
Just make them emotional support kitties. It'll be fine.
Hey, baby. Say something. You're by a microphone. Oh, she won't. So, is there anything else that anyone wants to talk about, or should we get into the final reviews of the year?
I guess we can do final reviews.
Like, don't everyone chime in at one? Like, everyone's just like, let's get this fuck over with.
Oh, no.
I mean, yes, but no.
Horror, are you sticking around, or is you? No, you don't have anything.
No, I don't have anything. I just came to chat for a little bit.
Did you see our list? Anything you want to chime in on? Did you play anything?
Let me double check. I don't think I did. I did not play any of those, no.
Well, you could enter to win the Axis Unseen thanks to the fine folks at Dark Product who hooked us up with a couple of giveaway codes. We'll be reviewing that later on in the show. If you were listening to this via MP3, as usual, fucked up. Be here on Twitch.
Missing out.
It is a live Sunday show this time. A rare Sunday show. And yeah, we're giving away 3 copies of The Axis Unseen. I have no idea if it's good or not. It looked pretty cool when ID at Xbox crew was playing it. I was watching their stream. Aki and Bree, you'll both talk about it. But for now, should we kick things off with Avatar, Aki? You ready?
Sure. Let's do this.
All right. First game to talk about tonight is Avatar Frontiers of Pandora From the Ashes. Developed and published by Ubisoft, provided to us for coverage by Ubisoft. Thank you, Ubisoft. Aki said thank you.
Thank you.
Released December 19th on Series X and S, PS5, and PC is DLC for Avatar Frontiers of Pandora for $24.99. A combo of Avatar and the expansion is available for $39.99. And a full-on complete edition with everything is out for $59.99, which, you know, despite the age, is a really, really good price for the package you're getting there. Return to Pandora as Solek, a warrior haunted by his past, struggling to find inner peace. His world is shattered once more as he faces a terrifying new enemy and fights to rescue his Sorrento family. Aki, what is going on in From the Ashes?
Okay, unlike the other DLCs, this doesn't continue as you playing as your own character. Instead, you have to choose this campaign from the main menu and start it. In it, you're playing as Solek. He is in the main game. He ends up being kind of your mentor and the guy who helps rescue you at the beginning. And he's a mainstay throughout the rest of the game as a mentor for the Navi side. And his whole thing was, he was in the battle from the movie, the very first movie, I think, is where he's supposed to be from, and his clan was annihilated by the humans, so he's been going around killing everyone associated with that battle. Every single soldier that was there, he's been wiping them off the face of the planet. And after the events of the main game and all the DLC, the following year is when this one takes place. He's finally killed the last of them, and he's like, okay, time for me to get some peace, I guess? I don't know. Fuck. So he goes and gets rid of all the dog tags that he's been taking from all the enemies he's killed, and then almost immediately, bad shit goes down because, man, these big blue people just can't get a fucking break. suddenly, you know, the humans are back and they're being jackasses like always. And oh yeah, they have some new friends now. They have a bunch of psychotic Navi who have joined them that want to burn everything to the ground. Woohoo. That's great. So in this, you end up having a handful of new enemies. It's still mostly the same enemies that you're used to. It's all taking place in the Kingler Forest, which is one of the larger parts of the standard map. It's not the full standard map, but it is a chunk of it, at least, that you have access to. And it's made different because this new clan have been burning it all to the ground. So it's not really very much in the way of lush green and multicolored bits of forest. Now it's all just burnt. So, woohoo. That's fun. And you're going to try to find the Sorrento because they've decided they're going to kidnap them to eliminate them, since they seem to be the people who have been getting all the groups together and actually made the fight a serious fight and kicked them off the planet once again. So they're like, yeah, we need to get rid of these people. So they kidnap your made character, if you want to import it, which is cool, and use that individual to capture the others, and they just wreck everything. So some of the new enemies you're fighting are, now there's some soldiers in like a power armor. It's no longer like the big mech suit that they get in that you're used to. Instead, it's like an exoskeleton that some of them wear. doesn't really make any changes from just a standard soldier. You can walk up and punt them like a little shit that they are, so that doesn't matter. And now there's also new robot dog things, which are massive pains in the ass, because they'll run up to you, slam into you, and electrocute you and send you flying off backwards, which is less than fun, because they can come in packs of 2 to 4, and they're just hard to hit because they're so small. And then the last really new major enemy is the enemy Navi, because they're just as agile as the main character, and they will use the same weapons as the main character. Sometimes they're running at you, dodging around, trying to slash at you with a knife. Sometimes they're running around throwing grenades at you, which really sucks ass. And then other times they have the human guns that you also occasionally use if you prefer those over the bows. And they're kept as mostly like boss battles. Or mini boss battles, and when you kill them, ironically, you get dog tags, which is how you upgrade your skills and stuff in this game, which is amusing. You also get normal level ups from getting XP from killing things, so it's not like you have to beat all of these things in order to get max level or anything, thankfully. And yeah, you're just going through ripping and tearing. You're basically Doom but guy, but more or less, yeah. One of the best cutscenes is right after he kills, I think, the first one of this new clan that comes by. They've basically destroyed the Anahe, which were one of the first groups that joined your character at the very beginning. They destroy their home tree, which is where they live and everything, and kill a whole lot of them. And he kills one of them and takes their knife. And then a bunch of soldiers start showing up, and he just goes feral and just destroys everything. It's so cool. I love that cutscene. Yeah. And
that's
yeah.
pretty crazy for a T-rated game.
Yeah, it is. It's awesome. I'm honestly surprised this DLC had it keep the T rating, honestly. Because he doesn't fuck around. He is all like, when you're destroying mechs, all of his finishers are different from the main game. So he'll like run up in front of one, slide in between its legs, cutting the leg thing so it falls down, and then just get up and just start stabbing it over and over. Sometimes he'll pull out the person who is riding it, and I think in the main game, you just yank them out and toss them to the side, and they just seemingly break their neck or something. Who knows? Mm. He'll grab them out, and he'll shank them right there, and then toss their body to the side like it's trash.
How does this integrate to the game? Is it included with the main stuff, or is it like main menu, pick this as a whole separate experience?
It's a whole separate experience. When you're on the main menu, you have to push a button for Xbox. I think it's the B button. It took me a while to find it, actually, because I didn't know how to get to it, because I didn't see it because it's in the lower right-hand corner at the very bottom, and it's small. And it says push B to choose which campaign. Then you have to choose it specifically, and then you go in. It is a much more streamlined game, which... honestly, I think I prefer this DLC more than I do the actual main game. While the main game is really fun, it is so open and so big that it ends up kind of like there's just too much, and this really shrinks it down a bit. So in this, you know, you have all the same, many of the same mechanics.
Being more linear and focused kind of helps it.
Significantly. And it's just not just that, like you have cooking mechanic in the game, which gives you different buffs and stuff. In the main game, you actually have a hunger meter, and that is tied to how quick you can move and to how much of your health regenerates and stuff like that. So if you're hungry, it doesn't work as well. If you keep yourself filled up, it works better. So you have to actually keep that kind of stuff in mind. In this DLC, there isn't a hunger mechanic. The cooking still gives you advantages, but it's not something that you need to really deal with all that much, which is very nice. And then for like weapons, there's an entire weapon and armor crafting system in the main game, and it's honestly, it's a pain in the ass to deal with, because you have to find very specific items in this gigantic fuck-off sized map, and then there's tiers of those items. Yay! And you have to collect it correctly to get better versions of it, and it has to be the right weather and daytime or nighttime stuff to get an even better version of it, so you can actually.
And then BX Latino Heat drops his 33rd month sub, and then.
Yeah. And
I thought you were just going to keep rolling off that.
Yeah.
Thanks, Latino Heat.
And all of your stuff gets better by doing things like that. That this DLC doesn't have crap like that. He has a handful of weapons, and that's what he has. Instead, you can go into the inventory and you collect weapon upgrade parts, and you just upgrade those weapons specifically. He's not making like, oh, you know, here's the 15 items I need to create this fucking bow. Let's create it. But if I replace this part, and this part, it'll give it different stats. No, he's like, this is my gun. Here's some shit. Now it gets +2 damage. That's all the armor, all the weapons, all that stuff is like that. And you can do it right from the menu instead of have to hunt down a workbench, which is really nice. It makes it a lot faster, a lot smoother, and it makes it to where you don't have to sit here for like 40 minutes trying to find the pieces that you need for this and hoping that you get the best version of it. It's just the main game has a lot of little problems like that that this doesn't have, and it makes it so much better, so much more fun, so much more fluid, streamlined, and just fast-paced because of that.
You know how long the campaign clocks out to in the end?
This campaign, you should be able to beat it between, if you're rushing just the story, you're getting through it in around 10-ish hours if you're heading That's straight for everything. If you're doing everything, you're looking at 20, maybe 25 hours.
Pretty beefy.
Yeah, it's a decent size. You, as I said, you have access to a pretty decent chunk of the main map. The Kingler Forest is a big area of the game, so you get access to the whole thing, even if it's not as pretty. So it's really nice. I am really enjoying my time with this.
Should we talk price on this?
Sure.
The DLC by itself is $25 if you are already an owner of the game in any of the DLC. The game with just this DLC, $39.99. It does not include the season pass content, or you can get a complete edition of everything for $60. What are your thoughts on all three?
I'm not sure. I like just this is a great price. This and the game. Honestly, I think you'd be better off just getting the complete edition instead, because some of the enemies and stuff that are in this come from the other DLCs, and I think that really helps just the main game story. I think it really fleshes out even further, so I would suggest, if you already have the game and you have the DLC, definitely this is worth buying. If you don't have any of it, get the complete edition. It's very much worth it.
Very cool. And if you're just curious about the game in general, it is on sale right now, I think for $20. Part of the holiday sale. So
nice.
Good prices all around. Next up, Fort Solace, developed by Fallen Leaf, published on Xbox by Feardemic, released December 19th on Series X and S for $19.99. Responding to an unusual emergency call from a remote mining base, Jack arrives at the dark and desolate Fort Solace. With storm warnings imminent, he heads inside to make a desperate contact. As night grows longer, events spiral out of control, and the mystery of what happened to the crew begins to reveal itself. The storm is approaching, limiting Jack's escape as he looks to hold out until morning arrives. Bree and Aki, both of you played this one. Bree, you checked it out on Xbox. Aki, I believe you covered it on PC a while back, yeah?
I don't think I actually ever covered it. I think this is something that you got in a Humble Bundle or something. And
oh, maybe. Well,
right on.
You both played it. What do you think? Bree, start us off. What is Fort Solis?
So you're on Mars at a mining colony. You start off as Jack, the senior engineer on the project. And while you and your coworker are shoring up some rig damage before a big storm, there's a manual alert set from a neighboring site called Fort Solis. Calling them doesn't work, so we have to go to the site to check it out. We drive over to the site and find that it's in lockdown, which we have to override. And we have some quick time events for climbing and getting into the facility. Jack and his coworker Jessica work for the Terra Mining Corporation, which are part of a terraforming and research team on Mars since the Earth is running out of oxygen and in deep shit, basically. This is a third-person cinematic narrative game. There are good camera moves around the characters, good action sequences when they show up. Even the lighting helped create tension in this game, like really, really well done, cinematically speaking, like you get credits like the opening of a movie. There's just, you know, good cutscenes that flow in the middle of the story that you're in between your exploration. You have the option to put performance over graphics or vice versa in the options. I think the graphics in this were great. It's realistic with an artistic style that's beautiful. And excellent texture work and lighting, again. I would mention just those were very well done. Exploration in the space is part of the tension in this thriller. The station is empty of people, and just their artifacts are left behind. And we can interact with like pool tables and vending machines and find data pads with audio files and videos on them about the crew of Fort Solis. You can also get more story and access to the facility by gaining access to computers and performing hacking-type actions to override locked doors. There are passcodes to learn and key cards to find to gain access to more of the facility.
Question. Is this a horror game? Can I die? Or is this just more of like an adventure? You're going to experience the story. There's not really a death mechanic.
It's more that second part where it's more like psychological horror, sci-fi, but not so much the risk of death. It's more trying to solve the mystery.
I don't have a monster chasing me this whole time.
No.
Okay.
No. Eventually we find some evidence of what happened to the crew and the mystery deepens. The clues to the story are all laid out for us to find in well-designed corridors and rooms. There aren't a lot of characters, but there is plenty of dialogue. You're talking with your coworker via comms, devices that are on your arm. And again, you get videos of the other crew members that you can't find and are trying to figure out what happened to them. There is excellent voice acting and audio in this. Roger Clark does Jack's voice. You might know him from Red Dead Redemption 2, where he voiced Arthur Morgan. And then Troy Baker is in this later into the game as well.
Never heard of him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably a new guy in the scene.
Yeah, totally. So yeah, good voice acting. Walking around at first was slow and odd. You keep walking after you stop pressing on the stick a little bit, but also
this at first.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm getting to that. Because it felt kind of realistic though that when you like let go of the stick, it doesn't automatically stop moving. But yeah, even the idle animations of Jack checking his comms device and fidgeting felt natural. I had to get into the habit of stopping ahead of button presses on doors and computers to make things feel more fluid. Really though, Jack is in like no hurry to get anywhere. And while I can see that helps the atmosphere a little, it was irritatingly slow. And I wish there was just a little more pep in Jack's step.
Yeah. Here, let me explain this to everybody. There's a walk button And you know how some buttons say, oh, hey, yeah, just push in the thumbstick and you'll run. No, in this game, you push in the thumbstick and it's walk faster.
Not even. It's just, yeah. it's the walking is slow, but there's the walking whole game and mall is walking. Paced.
Basically, yeah. Yeah. I don't even know if it's fast enough to be called mall walking, but literally in the instructions, it tells you to push that button to walk faster, not to run, yeah. Just to walk faster.
Yeah.
It hurts my soul.
Yeah.
Give me a run.
Exactly.
There are action cutscenes where there's a bit more speed and movement later on in the game, but the game starts out a little slow. Honestly, though, like if I didn't know this was an indie game, I would have thought this was from a bigger studio. This is like a really quality presentation.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
I might compare aspects of this game to things like Soma, Deliver Us the Moon, Moons of Madness, Observation, The Invincible, all of which I enjoyed. I can't make direct comparisons to any one thing, but like if you liked any of those games, there's a potential that you might like this game. This is a little bit of a slow burn, building tension in the beginning through empty space as much as the stuff in it. The game clocks in at about 4 hours of gameplay, a little longer if you're super thorough, with each of the four chapters in the story being around an hour each. As such, I feel like I really can't give you too much of the story without ruining it for you. I felt like this was meant to be played episodically. And, I don't know, I enjoyed my time with this, but there were some downsides to it, like the slow walking. Aki, what were your thoughts?
I generally like it. I like the all the stuff that you could find and your interactions with Jess about everything. Because Jess is your partner from the very beginning, and she basically talks with you the entire time. And almost everything you find, you talk with her about, and I mm-hmm. love that interaction.
Yeah, yeah, that it's banter was really well done. Yeah.
But then again, I just really like Jess. And they did Jess dirty as hell. I really enjoyed it. I did have some problems with it. It was always with some of the QTEs, because there's a bunch of those in the game. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the worst one for me is you have to unlock a door. About
any assist not to help with those at all or no?
No, I had an assist because I was on a computer. I just slowed down the game.
That hacking door override thing moves really quick.
Yeah, and it's very hard to do, and I could not manage it without slowing down the game to like I think 1/4 of regular speed, and I still had trouble getting it even then. All the rest of them weren't too bad. Especially because, honestly speaking, when I failed one, I just quit out because I wanted to do them all perfectly, just because I wanted to see what they would look like if I did them perfectly. Because I know if you fail them, you have a tendency to get injured. And a lot of them, it doesn't kill you or anything. It just, he gets injured. And I was wondering, if I get them all right, does he get out of here just in perfect health? Like, this was just a nice summer breeze, and
I would actually point out one other thing real quick, is that there are two technical endings to this game. There's, like, a good and a bad ending, so there's a little bit of replayability.
And they're both bad to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I like bad endings.
Of course you do. They're both bad endings, but one's just slightly worse than the other.
What's curious is this game is cheaper on Xbox than other platforms.
Really?
It's $24.99 on Steam and $29.99 on PlayStation 5. Those are published by different publishers. And then Feardemic put it on Xbox for $19.99.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess they're helping us out a bit with the weight that we had with it releasing on other platforms. You can get it as part of the Steam winter sale for like $9 right now. Nice. But for the Xbox, it is out now at $19.99. They have two bundle options if you're interested in either of those. You could get it with The Backrooms $19.98 for $24.99. So you're saving $5 there, or you could get it with bad cheese for $27.99, saving another $5 there instead. The game itself is $20. What is your verdict?
Lucky, go first. Oh, okay. I think the price is right for this quality of game. It cheaper now that I know that it's cheaper on Xbox. Like, heck yeah. But I also know its lack of action is going to be a detractor for some people. Like, you could call this a psychological horror sci-fi walking sim almost. There was a lack of wow factor in this that I really wanted to go along with all the other great stuff that was going on. But all in all, I'm going to give this a buy it, just with the warning that this game isn't going to be as action-packed as some people are expecting until later in the game. It's a real slow burn.
Aki, your thoughts?
I think if you have a tendency to walk like walking sims, then this is definitely going to be for you. Mm-hmm. I thought this was a fantastic one. If they aren't for you, I still think this is worth at least a try it, because yeah. I really enjoyed the story and the voice acting was really good and the visuals were amazing. I think it's at least a try it if this isn't your genre, and a definite buy it if it is your genre.
Very good. All right, let's move on to The Rogue Prince of Persia, developed by Evil Empire, published by Ubisoft, provided to us by Ubisoft for the purpose of this coverage. Thank you, Ubisoft. Chris, say thank you.
Thank you.
Released December 16th on Switch and Switch 2 for $29.99. On sale until January 5th for $29.99.
Yeah,
$20.09.
They got me.
Yep. Like it. Good stuff. Dive into a thrilling and epic adventure where every action pulses to the heady rhythm of an intense soundtrack, master fluid, acrobatic, and responsive combat, paired with challenging parkour. Death after death, forge your own playstyle through exploration and encounters. Perhaps you'll find a way to right your wrongs and save the Persian kingdom envisioned by the evil empire. Chris, tell us about your time with The Rogue Prince of Persia now that it has hit the Switch and Switch 2.
Okay, so yeah, this is the latest in a long-standing series. You know, most people know The Prince of Persia, I think. Funny enough, I didn't actually grow up with this one. I first played it on the Master System as, like, an adult. but anyways... Yeah, so that's okay, because this is completely different from anything else in the series. So if you're new to the series, you might as well play this one. It was... Okay, so I know they just came out with a Prince of Persia, like, last year, right? So, you know, they're already following it up with something else. And so I guess this could be considered... well, I don't think the games in the main series are even connected, so I don't know. But this is, like, a different take on the Prince of Persia.
Yeah,
so,
I think this is just like an alternate timeline or alternate history or universe, right, or something like that.
I know the princes are different usually, but they don't have names, so it's hard to say. By the way, I think an anonymous prince is a silly idea. That's the entire idea of royalty, is that everybody knows who you are. why don't they have names? Anyway, but yeah, this one was actually developed by, you know, as I think you mentioned, Evil Empire, and they created, like, the DLC for Dead Cells. So this is a company that's very much, like, in the roguelite kind of, you know, category. So yeah, you play as the prince, who, by the way, they're like... try and right your wrongs or something like that. He didn't really do anything bad. Like, his kingdom was under attack by the Huns, who were, you know, the bad guys. And he just fights one of their commander or something and loses. And then he wakes up 3 days later, having been, revived by a mysterious character. Who basically reveals that he has a magic bola, which looks like an amulet. And it's a running joke in the game that he considers it an amulet, but it's actually a bola. There's, like, arguments about that, and I have no idea what that means. But yeah, he basically has to make his way to the castle where his family, you know, the royal family is supposedly alive, but, you know, under attack. So he needs to make it over there from the place where, you know, he was, you know, the battlefield where he lost 3 days ago. And so the entire adventure, basically, it's kind of Castlevania like, right? It's that you're just starting from one place, trying to get into a castle and then defeat the big bad guy. That's it. And like Castlevania, or at least some of the Castlevanias, you do so at first through a very linear path through, you know, set levels and such. But then it eventually expands to all these different places that you can go. So yeah, the game is a roguelite, which means that as you're going through your side-scrolling adventure, die. It is meant to be. You are supposed to die. And then you have a couple of different kinds of currency, one of which you will lose upon death, and that's gold. Well, I think you lose all your gold. I'm not exactly sure. But the other one is like the soul embers or something like that, which you can spend on basically improving your character and making more types of weapons and items and medallions, which are something they really want to pitch to you, available in the run. So then during the run, you will run across, like, you know, different weapons that you can then equip. Some you can purchase, some you can, you know, swap out or whatever. And like I said, you know, it's, you're meant to keep dying and keep improving, and, like, you know, then you can make it to the end. And then of course in this one, whenever you go through a run, you might find a new character that you can then send back to the original place, which then acts as like your hub town. And the more people you rescue, the more, like, will show up in your hub town to, like, help you improve yourself. There's also quests that you can do within stages, that will help you get characters and items as well. And then, yeah, like, the main thing is that, you know, even though, like I said, you start off like, okay, I'm going to go, you know, from the desert where I was to the sewers, and then, you know, on through the other places to the castle. Well, while you're in the sewers, you might find a map to the Hun's campground. And then you have a choice when you leave the desert area. You can either go back to the sewer and, you know, try to go through that path again, or you can go through the Hun's campsite, which is much harder, but, you know, also has other stuff in it to unlock. So that's pretty cool. So yeah, that's the basic thing. It's like, it's roguelite, so it's, you know, pretty easy to understand if you're a fan of the genre. Of course, roguelite as opposed to roguelike simply implies that you keep certain things when you die. You don't have to start the game entirely over. A true roguelike would just have you start the entire game over, essentially, once you die. So that's kind of the difference. There's the, you know, now that things like Hades are, you know, and actually Dead Cells as well are really popular, it's like, I think a lot of people really kind of understand this concept more than, like, the concept of a true roguelike, like Toe Jam and Earl. That's what I like to use as my example of a true roguelike.
I mean, it's not wrong.
It is. It's a roguelike RPG. That's the only genre it is. So the main draw to this one, because all this sounds like, probably sounds pretty familiar to people. Oh, and that the story changes as you keep dying and stuff, like it unlocks new dialogues and things like that. So more parts of the story, although there's not a whole ton of story to tell. I mean, like I said, the Prince of Persia himself is somewhat anonymous, and his mission is very simple. So it's kind of like, you do get lore and stuff, but it's not anything on the, like, level that Hades games are, but, you know, because they specialize in being lore. What this game specializes in is being a really kick-ass platformer with lots of cool moves. As opposed to the original Prince of Persia, which I find almost unplayable because it's just not my style of thing, you know, it's very slow, and it's like, because it's so over animated, it's like there's a huge amount of input delay. It's like you run, or, and then, like, your guy kind of takes off, sort of running, and then builds up speed and momentum, and then you try to stop, and, like, it's hard to stop, and, you know, it's like, you know, it was tried to be more realistic, right? Like, that was the whole point of the original Prince of Persia. Well, in this one, they don't care about all that. It's like your prince zips. He zips around like crazy. You know, you really feel
very,
like
very smooth. Fluid. You could feel the Dead Cells influence in this game.
Yeah, he moves real fast, you know, real high frame rate, you know, lots of animation, but yeah, he is like moving around. And the other cool thing is that on top of like, you know, being able to wall climb, like in certain other games, like, I don't know, Metroid Fusion or whatever, and also being able to like do like kicks, which kind of stop him in midair, which are really handy for certain fights. He also, of course, has the dash move that can change as the game progresses. He also has one that's unique to this particular game, and that is that he has, yeah, he has a 3D wall climb. Now, what that means is that on top of climbing the vertical walls that are right in front of you, he can also climb the walls that are in the background behind you. So, you know, it's got that kind of meant, as they say. He's the Prince of Parkour. So what this means is that as long as there's a background in back of you, there's all kinds of clever ways that you can get across gaps and, like, really, like, fling yourself to places you didn't think you could reach. And, of course, even though the levels are procedurally generated, I noticed that there are a lot of ways in which this can really help you move around and locate things you couldn't otherwise. So that's really cool. The battle system is also really fun. Of course, you, like I said, you equip a weapon of some kind as soon as you enter like a new stage or something like that, or have an option to. You have your regular attack, which is just like a sword swing, or in the case of my current playthrough that I'm just kind of, you know, moseying around in while I'm talking, he has a sensor, which is like a ball at the end of a chain, I guess, that you light up or something. But it just, it works like a big rotating kind of windmill attack, and it's really cool. And you can light it on fire too, which is very nice. He also gets a distance weapon. So, like, it starts off as a bow and arrow, and, you know, in the tutorial part of the game, and then, like, more often than not, I end up picking up the Chakram, which is a bladed boomerang, which is an interesting one, because it goes back and forth, right, like a boomerang in a video game does, but you're not supposed to catch it, you're supposed to dodge it, because it's made of blades. Like, yeah, that's pretty obvious, actually, now that I think about it. So yeah, you know, you throw it at enemies and stuff, but then you get the hell out of the way, unless you want to get sliced and diced as well. Speaking
like a frisbee,
of getting sliced,
you gotta catch it with your arm.
Maybe, I don't know. I don't throw round blades in my regular life, so I could not.
You never played catch the saw blades with your carpenter dad?
No, not my carpenter dad.
This was just anyway. Me.
Yeah, you know.
Throw saw blades at me. Let me make that
clear. Yeah, he did. Yeah, I
not yet. At least
I believe it because you have all your limbs. Yeah. Oh wow. Okay. There's some drama there.
And we'll
I never
watch
heard of somebody
Steelers
getting
together.
Yeah. But anyways. So, yeah, that's kind of really all there is to tell about this game. Oh, yeah, there are other things like, you know, equipping medallions, which give you unique skills that aren't covered. Yeah, that aren't covered by anything else. And you can equip them and they kind of work passively all throughout your run. So, like, if you want to do one where, let's say, when you throw your chakram, it makes a bunch of goop appear on the ground that kind of slows enemies down. Like, that's one that I got. And there's a whole ton of those as well. And even though I haven't played this far into it to do this, apparently they can also be combined to do, like, really cool things and such. So lots of attention paid to the systems. Graphics are extremely good. It's got that kind of, it looks like a hand-drawn cartoon kind of animation. I don't really know what that's called, but it is a specific style. It's like, it is 3D, but kind of cel-shaded, but kind of also works like a 2D thing. I don't know. This is like the way to do 3D on 2D, in my opinion.
I keep forgetting how other people described it, because I know we covered this one like twice already, because Ubisoft likes us and likes having us talk about their game. But yeah, I don't know what the style is officially called. Just hand animated, 2D cel painted. I don't know. But how does it perform on the Switch too? Does it work well? Run well?
So it runs really well on the Switch too, as to be expected. However, that's actually something I did mean to point out. So thank you. The load times are so long. It really does take it a long time to load the initial game, and then also to load like your run. Once you have a run started, it goes pretty quick after that point. But yeah, it's just like it. Yeah, I was like, it should not take this long to load this much game. But anyway, I also wanted to give a shout out right quick while I was talking about the aesthetics to Asadi, who is the composer of the game. He's a like an actual composer, musician, you know, who incorporates Persian sounds into a kind of hip hop and kind of, you know, electronic beats oriented type of music. So as you start to listen to the game, you're like, okay, this is kind of hip hoppy, I get it. And then you like listen traditional sounding, like kind of, you know, Persian instruments and such, and that's actually the style signature of the composer of this game. So that's kind of cool that they found a guy to do that, for one. You know, but yeah, I just wanted to shout out the soundtrack too. But yeah, performance wise, like I said, it is good. A little slow to load, whatever. Maybe that's something that will be fixed, or maybe that's just the way this kind of game goes.
It didn't really detract from. I notice on the Switch it's 3.7 gig, and on Switch 2 it's 1.4. Seems like
maybe it's unpacking down a little bit better. Yeah, maybe it's unpacking something. Yeah, it makes sense. But yeah, I mean, I'm talking like probably a full minute to load once you choose a path and start your run. Like I said, when you go from room to room, though, it's not nearly as slow. And actually, once you die and it's loading the hub, it doesn't take very long either. It's just the
generating the whole level, man.
Yeah, exactly. It's like it takes a long time to initialize and it takes a long time to load the run. The other complaint I have, and this I guess goes for all Ubisoft stuff, is that you have to have a Ubisoft Connect account to start the video game. It doesn't even have very many online features. It has, of course, the Ubisoft Connect feature. It has a news channel. That's all I can tell. It actually does online, so I don't really like having to sign up for Ubisoft Connect just to play this single-player video game, which doesn't really have an online element.
Yeah, it's a Ubisoft thing. They like having their reward program across all the games and their shared experience and level-ups and stuff like that. So
yeah, I'm not a fan, but even though we're all used to it now, I still feel the need to complain because I have a few of their games, but I don't play them all that often. So yeah, every time it comes up, I'm just like,
all right. Well, the game is $30. Again, if you buy it before January 5th, it is $20.09. Chris, what are your thoughts on The Rogue Prince of Persia?
I think it's a buy it. It's very fun. It's got a lot of cool things to it. It doesn't really have any downsides, honestly, in terms of being an action roguelite game. I haven't played enough Hades or Dead Cells to tell you to like compare it really, but at least I know enough Prince of Persia to say this is definitely my favorite one. So yeah, I like it, and I think that it is worth your pennies. And signing up for Ubisoft Connect.
All right. Next up, The Axis Unseen, developed by Just Perky Games, published by Dark Product. They also hooked us up with some giveaway codes for this. We give one away now.
Sounds good.
Do it. It is released December 18th on Series X and S for $24.99 and back on December 4th for the PS5. So it is a little 2-week delay, but it's here. Giveaway draw. First winner is Latino Heat. We'll get you a code in just a second. But The Axis Unseen is a heavy metal horror game created by one of the devs of Skyrim and Fallout. Track down nightmarish creatures from folklore and mysterious open world, steal their enhanced senses, and discover arrows with immense powers. But beware, the hunter often becomes the hunted. Aki and Bree, both of you covered this. Who wants to start off on this one?
I can.
Go for it.
And this, you play as Chucklefuck McGee, and you're hunting. Name. Yep. And you're hunting monsters of various types in an alien landscape, and you're doing it with a weird fucking bow. There are magical runes about that you can walk up to, and they fill up your bow's quiver pretty quickly. You occasionally find some stuff that upgrades how many arrows your quiver can hold of each individual arrow type. And sometimes you get things that I think increase your health. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you're realistically, otherwise, this is a standard hunting game, just with nightmarish creatures and a really fucked up looking world. So, like, all the deer look like they don't have flesh. It looks like it's just muscles running around, so they're creepy looking, and I think there's, like, horns coming out of them in weird places, too. All the wolves that can attack you are, like, giant werewolf-like creatures.
That sounds cute. And puppies.
Exactly, except for they're not furry either. I don't know if they know what fur is in this game.
Oh my god, do I put Jacob's face on this thing? Oh my.
Yes. I mean, yes, you can make it more horrific. Yeah, go right ahead. Every time you kill one of these things, you're able to stay in close proximity to it for a second or two, and you get some magical energy that you absorb. And you can use that after you find one of the many, many fast travel points to go back to your lair. And there you can use those points to buy different types of arrows and stuff. Something. I'm not really sure what it does because I didn't really want to mess with it, just in case I figured out what it actually properly did and was like, oh, I don't want to spend stuff on that. So I was just kind of leaving that alone for now. And yeah, it's a gigantic, extremely open world. And you're basically told, hey, yeah, crawl around the whole time and hope that animals don't sniff you out and run away, because there's not a whole ton of them in any individual area, and if they run away, good luck fucking finding them, you dipshit. So, yeah, there's, I think, 6 different biomes that you can get to eventually. I've been working in the first biome the whole time because it's a hunting game, and I fucking suck at hunting games. Because this has, like, when you pull out your quiver, you also pull out a flag, and that tells you how the wind is blowing, and that's important to your shots, and there's arrow drop, and you have to calculate all of this, even on the easiest difficulty. It's hard to hit anything unless it's point blank at you, and even deers, if you go after them, they're going to ram into you and hurt you, and I keep doing what I did with the Angeline Era game. I played it on the hardest difficulty because I'm a dumbass. And it has permadeath, I think, on that. So I've been trying to avoid that.
There's a permadeath difficulty level for this game as well. There's like 5 different difficulties, and easy removes enemy detection, like aggro. And you have to like provoke the enemy or it won't attack. And then the highest level is the permadeath difficulty. So.
And there is an achievement for beating it on that difficulty, hence I went into it.
Yeah.
Thankfully, you, at least at early game, you don't have to worry about it too much, because as long as you're killing the enemies, you can always run back and go back to your lair, because there you can refill your healing ability. You get some little bone charms that you crush, basically, and it gives you some of your health back. And I think you start off with like 3 or 4 of them, but anytime you go to your home base, you can refill all your shit for free. Yay! So, yeah, I did that basically after every werewolf fight because they fucked my shit up. Oh, one more really cool thing. Anytime you fire an arrow, as long as it isn't a spirit arrow, which basically tells you what stuff is around the arrow to help you find stuff. If you're smart, or if you're me, you don't use it and you just never find anything. All of your other arrows, when you fire them, when you get close to them, they automatically zip back to your quiver. You don't have to go and pick them up or anything. You just have to know where they are generally, so you can get close enough for them to go right back at you, and it's great. Yeah. Bree, what are your thoughts?
I struggled with this game a lot. I thought the world was really interesting looking. It's filled with like horned and antlered statues that tower over you, all holding their hands in a specific way. There's like larger skeletons of giant beasts once, you know, slain by something bigger than us. There's these temples and teleport doors that lead you around. But the world is like really big and there's not a lot of good landmarks to navigate by, but that's really all you can navigate by. There's no HUD, there's no compass. You're just sort of ambling around looking for like green glowing things in the sky or fires or something like that. The combat to me was kind of meh. Like, you have your bow and your knife. I think you get a spear later and then like fire arrows and stuff like that. You have a dash that appears to only go forward, I guess, toward the enemy.
Yeah.
You can only carry so many arrows. You can glean them from the ground, like Aki was saying, and then you get the refill pillars. But mostly I just stabbed things with my knife because there was like, it was difficult to navigate. Like, if there was arc on the bow and arrow shots. It was hard to hit moving enemies like the Bigfoot or whatever it was. I got lost and stuck maybe early on, and I didn't really feel like I knew what I was doing from the tutorial. I felt like there was a lot of cool world to explore, but there were these portals to upgrade areas that looped, and I got stuck in them not knowing what to do for quite a few. The only, you know, like the green light pillar was kind of helpful as an objective, but
The name of this game is Hey, Want to Get Lost?
Yeah.
You'll get lost. That's the name of this game in a nutshell.
And, I was also really expecting more music from the store write up. There's this one twangy track that plays on a loop while you're searching for meaning in this game. And then I finally found some heavy metal music as I got close to an enemy, but then I couldn't hear the enemy. Speaking of the store write-up, I'm not really sure where the horror is in this either. Like, there were skeletons and even a little blood, and there were creatures to hunt, but I really didn't get the horror elements.
I'm thinking the design.
Yeah.
Yeah. Later on in the game, you do face gigantic creatures that are extremely tall, that, you know, they tower over you. So there's also that, and they are very violent. So that.
Yeah,
that's where I'm gonna die.
I think I found the musical elements took me out of the immersion of the hunting. This was kind of slow and boring to me. There really wasn't any exposition to the game to let me know what was going on, aside from some journals that you have to find out in the world. I think the most interesting thing about the world was the visuals of the like temple, statue, giant skeletons.
Yeah.
I guess I just wasn't expecting it to be kind of like a walking sim, which is what this felt like to me, just with hunting.
Yeah, for me, this felt like one of those like professional hunting games where they take it very seriously and they're like, oh yeah, if you make one sound 15 miles away, everything's going to scatter. That's exactly what this game felt like. It's like, okay, so, yeah. Not exactly a game for me, as we found out from the one hunting game that I've played prior that was like that. And I was like, no.
Yeah.
I do like the premise, but that's about where it ends for me, sadly.
All right. Well, it clocks in at $24.99. What are your thoughts?
I'm going to let you go first, Aki.
Okay, for me, I think most people, this is a pass on. The maps are just too big, and the enemies are so fast. If you fuck up and don't kill them instantly, they're just gone. They're gone unless they're going to attack you, and then they'll fuck your shit up. But otherwise, it's so big, and there's just a whole big group of fucking nothing that it's like, eh. So I think this is a pass for most people. I think the only people who would really want this are the people who play like those like really in-depth hunting games. And I'm not sure if this is in-depth enough for even them to really like. But they're the only people I would say try it on. So otherwise, it's a pass for everybody else.
Yeah, I'm still not sure what to make of this game. It has some things going for it, but ultimately it's a pass for me. I would give it a try it if I knew what was going on.
Would you give it a try it if Jacob's face was in the game?
Yes.
It'd be a lot scarier.
Are you looking at the stream?
I am.
Are you ready?
No, but do it anyways.
Oh my.
Well, I'm aroused.
Yeah, I think if they wanted to fix some of the problems with this game, they need to make it a lot more compact. It is so big and there's so much empty in between everything. I think they just need
like my butthole. It's so big and so empty.
No, it's full of shit just like you. So yeah, if they shrink the map by probably to a quarter,
so make of it
the
size a little more it actually focused.
Is, make it a lot more focused, and I think it would probably do a lot better. I know I would have a lot more fun with it if it was a lot smaller. Because yeah. I know I walked in
you
one
like
direction.
Them small though, so
yeah.
Big thanks again to Dark Product for letting us check this one out and for hooking us up with the giveaway keys. We'll be giving away another one later on at the end of the show. So stick around in the audience and keep hanging out because freebies, yay! Next up, Arcade Archives 2, The Outfoxies, developed and published by Hamster Corporation, released December 17th on Series X and S, Switch 2, and PS5 for $16.99. The Outfoxies is an action game released by Namco Limited in 1995. You select one of the world's top assassins as your protagonist, and under the orders of a mysterious billionaire, your mission is to eliminate all the others. Whether for the reward, for pride, or simply for the thrill of combat, a no-rules showdown among the world's most dangerous professionals is about to begin. Jacob, how does it work defending Epstein's Island?
I mean,
God damn.
Like, the billionaire in this game is definitely shady as hell. So this game, what year did Smash Brothers come out?
I don't know.
Like, like 96-ish? 97? Is Chris still alive? Well, anyway. All right, so it plays like an early version of Smash.
Yeah, I am. I didn't hear my...
When did Smash Brothers first come out? Are you familiar with the Outfoxies from Namco?
Yes, with the Outfoxies, and Smash Bros. Was like 2000? I want to say...
Really?
It was very late. Yeah, it was very, very late in the... It's 1999.
Okay, all right. So think of this as kind of like a prototype Smash Brothers. It is a 2D fighter game. You versus opponent or you versus a computer. And you are one of, I think it's like six or seven different assassins. And... you are tasked with killing off all of these other assassins for whatever reason. And, you are tasked all this stuff by a Mr. Acme, who is this like shadowy, you know, billionaire guy who's just like, kill this person. They're trying to flee to Europe. Like, I will give you two million like Swiss francs for it.
Modern day politics. Yay.
And, and so you get to choose one of your different characters. There's like, and all of them end up being kind of like Bond villains almost. Like, I mean, you have like a guy who kind of looks like James Bond Jr. If you remember that cartoon, there is a scientist guy who looks like, Teehee from Liver Let Die. He has like a mechanical arm thing that, you know, just like it does stuff. I don't know. Like it's a prosthetic metal arm. You have this brother and sister twin pair that like do all these like random somersaults all over the place as like they're bouncing all over the levels. A former actress who's, you know, trying to, like she's racked up so much debt that she's now just like killing people. It's weird, but anyway, so you are going through all these levels and they're all set in these different volatile areas. And I don't mean like, you know, like some Middle Eastern, like, you know, place where like the Americans are shooting the hell out of the locals. I'm talking like it's on a boat. It's on a plane. It's on a train. Like, it's in like some sort of like aquarium kind of thing. And it's really awesome because like you're given all these different weapons that you can use. Like you can use guns, grenades, swords. Like some of them are like level specific. Like you could use like a bowl of soup that you could just like throw at your enemy. There's like rocket launchers. There's all sorts of stuff.
So guns, rocket launchers, and soup.
Yeah. I mean, it's, why not, man?
I guess you're right.
And there are environmental dangers with some of these. Like, I mean, first off, if like a part of the environment takes too much damage, like floors could fall apart, walls can break. Like, and so like, if you're like in the aquarium level, like you can actually like break the glass and like sharks will just like fly out of like the thing. And like, you know, obviously like bite up your opponent. There's also like eels, that'll do that. And it's just like the plane level is really cool because like, if you use like the rocket launcher and start fucking shit up real bad, like the plane will suddenly like dip and like everybody will just like slide to like one side. The train was pretty cool too, because like, obviously there's a smokestack on top. Cause like, you know, it's old timey train, not like a bullet time or a bullet train. And so, like you can actually hide in the smoke, of the train. Like, it's neat. Like, this is like, it feels like it is really far ahead of its time. Like, and its only limit was the technology. It's got some really fascinating ideas with it. And I love like the circus level too, because what, like one of the people that you have to kill, like they're like a circus carny kind of person. But like, you, like there's trampolines that you can bounce off of. They're like, there's elephants running around. Like there's like a friggin' tiger that'll like maul you, or maul your opponent. There's like acrobats that are swinging on trapezes, which like you can grab onto to like hoist yourself up to like higher levels. Like, it's just like, it's amazing all of the stuff that they threw in here. And you know, it's hard as hell. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, it took me a while to get used to being able to like fire everything, and I'm still absolute shit with grenades. And I can't beat the game yet because you have to beat a final boss, because, you know, that's how fighting games are. And I'm not going to reveal, you know what? Y'all had 30 years to play this game. Surprise, surprise. It's Mr. Acme, because, you know, like what beat 'em up game or fighting game from, you know, this time period didn't have the, like the shadowy person who was shooting you all the orders. Oh my God, they're the ones who are going to betray you. Who would have guessed? So like they're like, oh, well, we're going to take you to our, like, you know, come to our compound and, you know, like we'll pay you here. Definitely not shady at all. And you have to put all of the skills that you, gained during this, like, you know, during your game essentially, and you have to like kill Mr. Acme, and like he's setting all these traps around his mansion, and like, so you have to like dodge the water that's going to come out, you have to dodge sharks, you have to constantly like be tossing boxes and like tossing grenades, which is the area that I constantly get stuck on because there's a spot where like they just keep tossing fucking grenades at you.
You have a trait very similar to Aki that when we find a game that you're really into, you can tell because you are so excited talking about this game.
Like
our
it's just
hearts are on our sleeves. It's a great thing.
Yeah, like I'm so glad that like I got a chance to play this game because I never heard of this. I've never seen it. I would have passed over. Like if I just saw it, like I'll be honest, if I had seen like the normal like layout of all the Arcade Archives things, I just would have passed this thing right over. Like I would never in a million years have been like, oh yeah, I've got to go get Out Foxies. Like
Chris, what do you know of Out Foxy? Because you're
nothing.
No, nothing. Chris.
I went
Chris,
into
I'm
this
asking Chris. I'm oh, asking. Oh,
sorry.
Schmuck. Although I don't know if he's at his computer. So. Yeah, oh, there he is. Chris, what do you know of Out Foxy?
Not a whole lot. Just like that it was a Namco game, and that it like has like that kind of one-on-one fighting with you know. Weapons and stuff.
I didn't know if this was something that was in one of your MAME collections or not.
I don't think I have it on anything, no. I know it's in the Arcade Archives, but that's, you know.
Yep, of course, we're talking about the Archives 2 version.
Right. So, yeah, I haven't played it, that's for sure. I just know about it.
All right, well, Jacob, it is out now on Series X and S, Switch 2, and PS5 for $17. What should people do with this one?
Absolutely get it. This is, like, as much as I loved, like Aqua Jet and, Air 22 and Tokyo Wars, this is the one I am just like, you guys need to get this game. Like, of all the Arcade Archives, like, they saved the best for the last of the year.
Like, I mean, there might be another one next week.
Well, yeah, but I'll review that in January.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They still might have another one this
year. Joe, shut up. This is the last one that they're releasing this year.
In our year, yeah, I guess.
This year, it is it.
The world ends tomorrow.
Oh God, I wish. Don't tease me like that. Oh man, I wish it would.
Oh man. All right. Next up, Explodera, developed and published by Synergy Circle Games, that released December 18th on the Xbox platforms for $4.99 per platform. In a future ruled by steel and circuitry, humanity's reign has ended. The machines we built to serve us have turned against us, deeming their creators unworthy to inhabit Earth. I don't see the lie. I guess let them win, right? Game over.
Yeah.
Game over, man.
Damn it, I was going to make that joke.
Cities lie in ruins, and the last remnants of humankind hide beneath the ashes of a fallen world. But hope isn't dead. It's armed to the teeth. Bree, what is Explodera?
This is a side-scrolling action platformer in the vein of like a retro something or other. It seems kind of run and gun and kind of not. You have pickups all over the board that do different things, like give you shields or rapid fire that doesn't seem to change anything, multi-shot and more stuff. You have 3 health. When you die, if you have enough score, you can retry. Otherwise, you go to the main menu and start completely over. But oh wait, I hit retry, and it just started me at the beginning, but with some of my score intact, because it charges you score. It seemed pointless to use the retry option, I'll be honest. Yeah. There are exploding barrels everywhere. Thankfully, they don't seem to chain out and explode everything everywhere and hurt me. There are platforming elements, platforms that you have to jump on, and barrels in the way that you can sometimes move, and there's spikes. Mostly, though, you're dodging and shooting robots that hover around that have way better accuracy and timing than I will ever as the hero. The jumping toward platforms and to shoot enemies above you is wildly inconsistent. Sometimes the jump was high enough, most of the time not so much. I played with holding the button longer to see if that made a difference, and it didn't.
No,
No. There's very little in the way of tutorial that was obscured by the pause screen fiasco. I will have to explain the pause screen in just in a moment here, because apparently I put that in my notes after I made that comment. Apparently,
are you Tarantino-ing us?
I am.
Oh, we're apparently, throwing some fucking curveballs last episode of the year.
Yeah, apparently A is jump and B is shoot, but I found that the right trigger also shoots. But yeah, the bigger downside was that when I started the game is listed as paused, even though you can still move. To get rid of this, you have to hit pause to pause the game, and then hit return on the screen and hope that you haven't taken a bunch of damage figuring that out. This happens every time I start the game. On at least two versions of the game. It did not happen in the Windows version, just the console version.
That doesn't sound good.
Yeah, so when you launch the game, it looks like it's paused, and it's not. If I could make that more clear, I don't know how else to make that clearer. It was very confusing, and it was very disappointing when I had to basically start over immediately because it was glitched.
Yay!
The pixel art was all right, though. The music was pretty rockin'. The only way I really got any story on this one was the store write-up.
How are the achievements?
They're easy. They're pretty easy. But yeah, I didn't have a good time with this one. It has some serious problems going on. I managed to finish the achievements, but I couldn't get more than like 10 minutes into the game because of the sighted issues.
That's a bummer. Well, let's rate this two ways. One for the achievement whores and one for the non-achievement collectors.
So yeah, for achievements, I think it's probably worth the price of admission just to get it done. And there'll probably be title updates in the future. That'll probably be pretty easy. And you'll get your, what is it, $5?
Yep.
$4.99 something? Yeah, you'll get your $5 out of it. Yeah, yeah. But as far as it being a game and enjoying the game, I would have to pass.
All right. Well, we got another synergy game to talk about. Maybe this one will be a little bit on the better side. Sugarbound 2, developed and published by Synergy Circle Games, released December 17th on Xbox One, Series X and S, and Xbox PC, $4.99 each. The Human Kingdom's food shortage crisis was resolved thanks to the efforts of the master... Bree, say that word, because I don't know.
Patissier? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Chloe Fondant, but the food was so delicious that we now face another crisis. It's just letters with accents confuse me. With all food reserves empty again, Chloe has no choice but to return to Sugarbound in search of delicious, and this time healthier, ingredients and food. Bree, what is Sugarbound 2?
So in this, you are a cute little baker in this sweet platformer. Platforming isn't the main goal, though. You also need to take out candy monsters, feeding them like piñatas for the goods inside. To get the goods, you'll need a weapon first. There are spatulas that attack at close range, frying pans that you can lob at a distance, and knives that you can throw at the enemy. And there's actually, you can throw a rolling pin, I think, as well, later on. It does, like, a slightly different throwing pattern than the knife. And when you defeat an enemy after, like, two or three hits, you get an explosion of fruits like lemons, vegetables like pumpkins and corn, or you might get some coffee or some baked goods like croissants or pretzels for your troubles.
Waiting for Jacob to make a lemon joke.
Nope.
The only lemon joke he would make is lemon party.
I mean, I'm disappointed now because, you know, I have an emote for that and I can't get to it fast enough. There we go. All right.
For lemon parties?
For it's a lemonade.
I remember 30 Rock.
Speaking of lemonade, I was actually making some just now in my toilet. Nice.
30 Rock had a joke where Liz Lemon's father, Richard, had a party. And they said it's not a lemon party without old Dick.
Oh, yeah.
On NBC.
Wow.
Yeah. How sugar bound.
Yeah, so for platforming, you have some jump pads and some candy cane spikes to deal with. You do need to be careful with the spikes and enemies because you only have 3 chef hats or health bars or whatever, you know, you have life to live there. The landscape looks like layer cakes and stacks of wet pancakes or stacks of chocolate and stuff like that.
I wish we had that on the soundboard, but it was too loud for everyone.
There are sprinkled cake pops for trees in the background. It's all very sugary sweet, and the pixel art is really cute. The music has obviously been eating the sugary treats, too, because it's pretty hyper in parts. There are also barrels hiding the goods that you need to collect, you know, the croissants and coffee and that sort of things that you can break with your weapons. And you get weapons each time you start the level. So, or you get the weapons after you start the level, more aptly. And so you have to be careful when you start off not going into an enemy without a weapon. So you may have to, like, dodge some things to get the weapon to get into the level. And there are boxes along the way to upgrade your weapon to, like, a knife or something that'll be helpful. You have several candy enemies to fight and slaughter.
I just punched my candy mic stand. Yay.
Oh, no. There are candy balls, both big and small.
Hold on.
Yeah, I think one of them is called like a ball junior or something is the small ball. There's a Swiss roll snail. And there's these pieces of hidden chocolate bars that will ambush you because they blend in with the level instead of walking around like the other enemies. And there are 30 levels to explore, but the game only needs you to explore about 5 levels for the base achievements. I suspect there'll be updates in the future, as there have been from this company in the past. The achievement list really just wants you to kill each type of enemy and like pick up a bunch of the stuff. And have some fun. Like, it's cute. I had an okay time with this one.
All right, well, $5 per platform on this one. Give it to us the same 2 ratings for Achievement Hunters and for Normies.
I feel like, for Normies, like, it's a try it. If it's an Achievement Hunter, this is like a fuck it, why not? Like, it's pleasant. It worked like it was supposed to. It's cute. If you played the first Sugarbound, it's kind of more the same, but with some minor, you know, upgrades and just, it's cute.
Was there any recasting in the sequel that fans are going to be up in arms over?
Not really, no. Yeah. I don't
know if the gumdrops were recast or not.
Yeah, I feel like I'd have to go back and read the store page for the first game to see if it's even Chloe Fondant again. If it was a different character in the first game, I don't know now.
She has no choice but to return, so I'm guessing it is the same.
Oh, so yeah, it must be. Yeah.
Two sugar, two bound. How about bound together? Ah.
Ooh.
That's a good project. Jocam.net/earthbound. One final game to talk about tonight and for the year. And why the fuck not?
SML After Dark.
Family Crush, developed and published by Wet and Juicy Games. Oh, released May 27th on Steam for $13.99. Family Crush is an adult visual novel where the protagonist is forced to stay in a house full of various girls. Gasp! I wonder what happens. Many years ago, he considered each of them a member of his family. How will the relationships between them evolve now after so many years? Aki, is this as fucking ridiculous as I'm expecting?
Probably.
Are you muted? You knew it was your turn to talk. Why did you wait so long to unmute?
I didn't wait. I've been unmuted for a while.
Oh, then what was the noise?
Me talking?
Sounded like you moved your mic or something.
I probably did. I reached over because I assumed I was muted, but I wasn't.
How dare you move your mic during a show? Who the fuck would ever adjust their mic during a show.
Exactly. So it's
Family Crush.
Okay. Amos, you play as a young dude, and you're about to start your first year of university, or your last year of university, whatever the fuck it is. I don't know. I don't care what year he's in. It doesn't matter.
Does any of the story matter?
Yes, it always matters. I don't like when the story doesn't matter. And your dad's like, hey, yeah, I'm leaving for work, and I'm not going to leave you home alone, even though you're legally able to, so I'm dropping you off at my ex's place. And then he drops you off there. He's like, oh, yeah, don't forget your stuff. Hands it to you. And you're like, okay, see you later, Dad. And he just fucks right off. Not even a goodbye. What a dick. And so, yeah, he just abandons your ass there with
Speaking of what a dick, I'm looking at the store page.
Mm-hmm. What a, yeah, indeed.
The one screenshot, like screenshot 1, 2, 3. Number 4, she's literally like, ah, what a dick.
That's perfect.
Oh,
but, yeah.
It is majestic. Majestic?
Damn, that was good. I like that. Majestic. Shit. So he drops you off with his ex, and you haven't seen that part of the family for like a decade or so. And yeah, you're reintroduced to Vanessa, the stepmom, and her 3 daughters. And they all have varying personalities, and none of them are exactly the most welcoming other than Vanessa. All the kids are kind of like, whatever, to fuck you, go away. And fuck you, they do. So, yeah, you have, you know, the rebellious one that is an old alt-punk rock type who just hates everything, probably, realistically speaking. You got the shy one, and then you got the one who's actually fucking put together for once in their life. Woohoo! And, yeah, it's mostly just your time with them. You spend around a weekish with them throughout the game. And yeah, you basically have to deal with Guinevere, which is the punk rock one. You have to deal with her and the guy who's stalking her. She was dating him for a while, and he's kind of a piece of shit, and she just hasn't gotten rid of him for some reason and is having trouble with her very lukewarm ways of doing it. Then you have to deal with one of them, the shy one, who's like, oh, yeah, I want to learn.
The shy one, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. And she wants to learn all about all the naughty stuff, but she doesn't.
Niblets.
No, she very much wants you to. She wants to learn about all this stuff because she doesn't interact with other people at all. She's a nerd, and she stays in a room and plays adult visual novel. She's me. This is a problem. And then there's
self-reflection lovely on this episode of the SML podcast.
Yeah, it's a problem.
Jacob, and your thoughts on the matter.
She doesn't have thoughts.
I don't
know. No thought, brain empty. It's fine. And then there's Love, the older sister who has some of her own weird quirks that she has to deal with, and you have to learn to deal with it as well. And then the mom who's generally put together until she drinks alcohol, and then she falls apart because she's kind of an alcoholic.
This is the game we needed the lemons.
Yeah.
Lemon-stealing whores.
And then you got, you know, some of their friends and their neighbors that you also have to deal with. And obviously everyone wants the D because it's a game. And of course they all want the D. And yeah.
I give them credit. I'm looking at the Steam page. Well, I'm looking at parts of this page that I'm allowed to look at right now. The development of the story involves sex scenes. However, sexual interactions in the game are optional and depend only on the player's choice.
Yeah.
I'm guessing you chose to fuck everybody.
As many as I could, because you always end up pissing someone off somehow. Yeah.
Of course you have 10 hours in this. Why wouldn't you have 10 hours in this? Holy shit.
Well, yeah, I had to get through as much of it as I could. I've almost finished, actually.
Didn't you say you got this yesterday?
Yes. That's why there's only 10 hours instead of, like, 20. What can I say? When I want to get something done, I get it done. Unless it's too long, in which case, then I can't. But, yeah, I've almost finished my first playthrough, yeah.
Jacob doesn't know about too long.
No, he doesn't. Yeah, you know, one pump chump, poor thing. At least it makes it quick. But, so...
$14 game. Give me your verdict. This is how we end the year.
Yep.
This is how we end the year.
With a big old creamy creamer. It's great. Yes, I'm so for it. It's great.
Plug in your family.
Yep. Your step family. It's slightly different. I still approve either way. I don't care. It's a video game. I don't give a shit.
And on that note, we are done, not just for the episode, but for the year. We are going on our annual holiday break. We will be back after MAGFest. As like last year, there's always a chance we could do a quick one-off early January, but if things go as planned, we won't be back until after MAGFest.
And when will that be?
MAGFest, for those who don't know.
MAGFest. And forget. Happens January 8th through the 11th.
Okay. I thought it was longer than that.
So then our first episode back would be what?
Maybe the 15th, maybe the 20th, maybe the 22nd.
Maybe February.
That'll be late January. I'm thinking maybe the 20th because I would like to enjoy the week off after MAGFest because that's always a massive drain on.
Yeah. And you always come back fucking sick. So.
Yay.
Yeah.
Well, the good thing is when I was at the doctor the other day, I got my flu shot, my pneumonia shot, and my COVID shot.
Good. Nice. Now take
in
some vitamins.
Bad arm.
Oh, no.
Well, I mean, you're not using it anyway. So.
I thought that's fair.
Take
some vitamin C packets. they will
dump a bunch of orange juice up your butt.
Like, no, I mean, you can move it through, I guess, but...
Do you see what I put up with, Chris? Every fucking Thursday.
Told him to suck on some lemons.
I mean, if he wants to shove some lemons up there, too, that's his own business.
I told you guys, the lemon-stealing whores were here, and they took all the lemons. They stole them. They're gone.
Yeah, bring some vitamin C packets. Hopefully you won't get us sick.
Music for the final show of the year. Our friend George got us a brand new Christmas song to play. The other week we played Vince DiCola and friends doing a live performance of the Angry Birds Transformers medley. And now we have it with Sleigh Bells.
Woot.
Woot indeed. Let's all go down the line. Aki, give me final words for the year.
Why did you start with me? What the fuck?
Because you're at the top of the list.
I'm never prepared for anything. You know
those
that.
Those are your words. Exactly. Bree, give me your words of the
year. Happy holidays, everybody.
Chris, happy final holidays. Words of the year.
See y'all later.
Jacob, final words of the year.
Never cross the picket line and don't be a fucking scab. Stay
Arnell,
union strong.
Final words of the year.
Fucking yeah!
Matt, final words of the year.
I'm not here. I never showed up. None of this ever happened.
We'll be right back.